Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. On this 4th of July, we will begin with how we are heading for autocratic rule in America with a Republican Party who placed power over principle and a president infatuated with dictators and disdainful of democratic values. We will discuss the unraveling of the left from the 1980s to the Trump nightmare of today with Thomas Frank, the founding editor of The Baffler, contributor to The Guardian, and author of Rendezvous with Oblivion. He joins us to trace the history of democratic socialism in the United States from 1944 to 1977, and we'll explore the schism between the blue-collar workers on the left and the right from a nearly eye-to-eye viewpoint to a perspective a world apart. And on a more hopeful note, we'll assess the groundswell of support garnered by Senator Bernie Sanders during the 2016 primaries and the promising new generation of voters, millennials, many of whom are social democrats. Then finally, we will discuss the latest in the ongoing civility war in the United States with Christine Fair, a professor in the Security Studies program within Georgetown University School of Foreign Service and a former political officer with the United Nations Assistant Mission in Afghanistan in Kabul. She joins us to discuss her confrontation with the white supremacist and leader of the American Nazi Party, Richard Spencer, at her hometown gym, and the booting of Sarah Sanders from the Red Hen restaurant. We will examine the death of democracy and Fair's contention that there isn't and never has been full democracy in the United States due to the Senate being rigged by the Electoral College and the gerrymandering of the House of Representatives by the GOP. She asserts that it may not be too far-fetched to see a civil war in the future with individual American cities revolting against rural red state domination. The only solution to realize American democracy, as she sees it, is massive civil disobedience led by the cosmopolitan liberal base. And joining us on this 4th of July is Thomas Frank, the author of The Wrecking Crew, What's the Matter with Kansas, One Market Under God, and Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle, and the Unlikely Comeback of the Right. A former opinion columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Frank is the founding editor of The Baffler and a regular contributor to The Guardian. And his latest book is Rendezvous with Oblivion, Reports from a Sinking Society. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Frank.
It's great to be here, Ian, on this beautiful Independence Day.
Well, yes. So how do we explain the red, white, and blue, the bunting, the celebration, the fireworks, the barbecues, the sense of patriotism? I'm not sure how much of it is being exhibited, but I've been to a number of 4th of Julys and actually found them quite moving. As a foreigner who's become an American, you often feel more affection for the country and its values than native-born Americans necessarily feel. But in the context of your new book, Rendezvous with Oblivion, Reports from a Sinking Society, that's a wake-up call. But unfortunately, that is the reality, is it not, at the moment, that we are losing our democracy?
It is the reality. And by the way, I'm one of these people who I used to feel very patriotic on July the 4th. It was my favorite holiday for years and years and years. By the way, I'm here in Washington, D.C. I mean, we really go overboard with the 4th of July celebrations. But, you know, it's hard for me to summon up that same kind of patriotic enthusiasm that I used to as a child. I think there's a lot of reasons. There's a lot of reasons for that, but maybe we'll go into that. Maybe we won't. Reports from a Sinking Society. That is where we are. That's what I have written. It's a book of essays, Ian, spanning the last 8 years or so.
Well, obviously, we can't accept the idea that we're sinking. I mean, we are sinking, but we have to bail ourselves out, don't we?
Yes. Absolutely. But I don't see that happening yet. I don't want to be too negative here. But the book is about there's two themes. One is the sort of ongoing gallop of inequality, all through the Obama years, which is when most of the essays were written, and into the Trump years. And the other is the corruption of the professions, which is a theme that I have been interested in for years, but have never been able, you know, I've never really been able to address it until now. And I'm absolutely fascinated by that, that as we come apart as a society, you know, as the glue that holds us together dissolves, this is what it looks like. This is what happens.
Well, the last time we came apart was the Civil War, and it's still the bloodiest war per capita in American history. So obviously that is, we don't want to go there.
Right.
The way I see the country breaking down is because it is essentially unfairly divided between the red and the blue, and the red states have more political power. They have the Electoral College. They've gerrymandered. The Democrats have to win 7 to 8% more votes just to break even.
Yes.
And that's the reality. So we do have, if we're going to have a new civil war, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a violent one, I think the lines are pretty drawn, aren't they, between urban, metropolitan, educated Americans and rural Americans.
Oh, maybe. What I meant by the glue holding us together was that the sense of social solidarity that you once found in this country. And what I'm talking about is that time, you know, I don't personally remember it, of course, but that time from about the Great Depression, you know, through World War II, and even after World War II to a certain degree. And that sense of, you know, solidarity is something that has really vanished in this society, and this sort of idea that it's every man for himself has come to be, you know, accepted wisdom. By the way, just last night such a funny thing. I was reading about Lyndon Johnson, and was again struck by the, you know, to our minds, bizarre fact that Texas used to have liberal senators, mm-hmm. liberals from Texas, and that farmers used to vote for liberals, you know.
And one was a vice president, one ran as a vice president.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. But this gets to the question of what happened to the Republicans, the party of principle, going back to Abraham Lincoln, is now the party of power, the party of treason, you might argue, because they're enabling Donald Trump, who clearly has some peculiar relationship with Vladimir Putin that even suggests treason. So this is the part that I don't understand. It's true that there were, back in Washington in those days when LBJ was around, Democrats and Republican senators knew each other's families, celebrated the 4th of July together, etc. Now it's open warfare. What happened? I mean, we have this phony argument now about civility versus incivility. Again, my concern is that we have a bigger fish to fry, and that is whether we are still going to be a democracy and not become a plutocracy and a kleptocracy, which is where we're heading.
That's right. That is exactly the problem. And you're right that the civility debate is a red herring. It's basically, I mean, because the same people who demand that you be civil, you know, go out and, I mean, you just think of all the, when I was writing What's the Matter with Kansas, just think of all of the crazy stuff that goes on when these people are protesting at abortion clinics. You know, it's the opposite of civility. A doctor that performed abortions in Wichita got murdered. I mean, these are some of the people that What's the Matter with Kansas was about. So civility, of course, look, the way to think about this is the Republican Party are absolutely and utterly cynical. We know what they want. What they want is tax cuts for the rich and deregulation, and they want their workers to have no power. That's what they want. Everything else is a means to that end, whether we're talking about the culture wars, whether they're talking about their demand that you be civil, whether we're talking about, you know, basically their gerrymandering, everything else that they do is a means to that end. That's what they're serious about. That's what they want. Everything else is just a ploy. And that's that's how you, I think that's how the best way to understand the modern Republican Party. Those are the principles. I mean, this is all very clear in something like Ayn Rand, you know, their favorite novelist. I mean, even their religion hits the bricks when it's up against, you know, profit.
That's P-R-O-F-I-T.
Oh, yeah, sorry, exactly. Yes.
And again, I'm speaking with Thomas Frank, the author of What's the Matter with Kansas? One Market Under God and Penny the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle and the Unlikely Comeback of the Right, and his latest, Listen Liberal. A former opinion columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Frank is the founding editor of The Baffler and a regular contributor to The Guardian, and his latest book is Rendezvous with Oblivion, Reports from a Sinking Society. Now, as we see, Thomas, the judiciary, federal judiciary being stacked with really right-wing federalist judges pre-approved by Leonard Leo and Don McCann, who's a member of the Federal Society, and we're likely to have this anti-abortion woman from Notre Dame as the next Supreme Court justice. And if Ruth Bader Ginsburg has to retire, then it'll be 7-2. It's going to be 6-3, which is pretty bad. So the question, going back to what you mentioned about LBJ, if you go back to the 70s, the Democrats had enormous majorities in both the House and Senate. And, of course, LBJ was the president with enormous majority he was elected with. You had real liberals on the Supreme Court. You had William O. Douglas and Thurgood Marshall and others. So the question would be, what happened to the liberals? They had all the power in the 70s, and then starting with the end of Carter through Reagan and up to the present, they've just sort of lost heart, and I don't understand why.
Well, what I try to, you know, I try to explain that in Listen Liberal, and it's, you know, so I criticize the right a lot, and I've written a lot about the Republican Party. But what's happened to the Democrats is just as interesting, because this party from the 1930s up to the 1990s had that majority that you just mentioned. From the 30s to the 1990s, let me repeat that. It's you know, with a few brief interruptions, they had the House of Representatives for 60 years. And they had it because they were the party of the people, and everyone knew it. They were identified with working people very closely, and that's working, you know, they served the interests of working people. And they have lost that brand identity. You know, that's not who they are anymore, and they are upfront about that. They'll tell you that's not who they are anymore. And this began in the 1970s and really took hold when Bill Clinton was president. And you remember he came in, one of the very first things he did was get NAFTA passed. NAFTA was a Republican proposal that was explicitly designed to disempower workers in this country, to strip away workers' bargaining power by making it possible for management to move factories overseas. It was a Republican treaty. Bill Clinton, a Democrat, got it done. And they've basically never looked back since then. And if you look at who they nominate for the presidency and the kind of policies and the kind of industries that they favor, they really are a party that cares very deeply about white collar professionals, you know, affluent people with advanced degrees, and cares very little about working class people anymore. And this has been a recipe for disaster, for long term electoral disaster. And you know, every couple of years someone will bring this to their attention, and every couple of years they'll brush it off and say, well, there's nothing that can be done, and this is what the way we have to go, and this is the only path that is thinkable and that is possible and that is doable. And on they will go. On they will sail, right on to oblivion.
Well, the period we're talking about.
Cheerful? That's very cheerful.
Very cheerful. But I'm going to get to something a little. We'll cheer you up, I hope, in a minute. But I wanted to just touch on that time frame that you're talking about, where the Democrats dominated, particularly the House of Representatives, because they were the party of the people. Arguably, we had social democracy in the United States, or at least a version of it, from 1944 to 1977. And to my mind, that has also been the casualty, along with the Democratic Party. The idea that everybody else in social democracies, it's a very simple transaction. You vote in stewards of your taxpayer money that provide you with good government services. And if they fail, you vote them out. That's the focus, not abortion and all these other issues that have become to dominate the American political discourse. And obviously, the Koch brothers and those of that ilk have been successful in demonizing government itself. And now we, of course, are at the tender mercies of the billionaires, as you've written about. So that is the evolution over that period of time, is to get rid of a sense that the government can help you and sabotage government programs as quickly as they can. And that's what they've been doing, the Republicans. So
who's making the argument, though? The only people I've ever heard who would agree with me. One of my Tom Frank talking points is that if you were, you know, For most people in the northern states of this country in that period that you just mentioned, it was a de facto social democracy. We never had, it wasn't on paper as it was in the UK or something like that. But that's basically what it was in the northern states. The world that I was born into, the social distance between blue collar workers and white collar workers was not that great. It was a completely different world, and today it's as though, you know, people look at that as though it was a, you know, impossible dream, as something that you could never achieve in this country. And I always say to young kids, it's like, we had that. We actually had that in this country, and we've lost it, you know, thanks to all those factors that you mentioned and that I've been writing about for years and years and years. The culture wars and the way the Republicans have manipulated people's populist sensibilities, you know, the sort of natural American populist sensibility, and thanks to the betrayal of the Democrats, it is extraordinary. But that's, you know, this is a moment for reflecting. Independence Day, let's look back at where we are and how we got here.
Well, now for my optimism. Bernie Sanders did extremely well. No corporate money, small donations, no help from the Democratic Party, unnecessary hostility from the Hillary people, who didn't recognize that he would have been the perfect vice president, and had they embraced him.
What a blunder that was.
Embraced him, Hillary Clinton would have swept in. And even the Trump voters supported Bernie Sanders. And Trump was very careful not to go after Bernie Sanders because he knew that there was that crossover between his supporters in his faux white man populism to the real populism, that authentic populism that Bernie Sanders represented. That campaign, I think, identified a whole constituency that sort of came out of nowhere. And that constituency is very strong and very growing, and it's tied in with the millennial generation. And now we've had this exciting election in the New York 14th Congressional District with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So this is something to celebrate and to nurture, isn't it? The fact that
Absolutely.
The younger generation in this country don't buy all this garbage, and they are, you know, without even knowing it, they're social Democrats.
And that's, I think some of them do know it, that is a very hopeful note. I like the way you describe that, because I think Ian, you and I think alike in a lot of ways. You're one of the only people I've talked to who remembers that had Hillary made Bernie her VP candidate, which is the way it should have gone, right? Because he was the only other Democrat who made any kind of splash in 2016. It only made sense for him to be on the ticket, and it would have saved her a lot of trouble, because Trump was, as you just pointed out, Trump was overtly appealing to Bernie voters. I mean, I was at the Republican convention, and he basically said, you know, for those of you who were supported Sanders, he was cheated by the Democratic Party, and I have adopted a bunch of his issues. He adopted them, but everybody could tell he was a hypocrite about that. But he made this overt appeal. She could have easily headed that off by making him the VP, and she chose not to do it. And we're all paying the price for that now. But you are exactly right to be hopeful, although I don't want to put too much pressure on the shoulders of a woman who is brand new to politics and very young, but Let me just say, I just loved the way she beat that guy in New York. There's just nothing better than seeing someone who has very little experience, a lot of good ideas, but no money, no funding to speak of, come out of nowhere and beat a veteran politician. I love that, and I'm very happy with what she did, and I'm happy that her politics are so popular with young people. You know, Ian, when I started writing about these things in the late 1990s, actually goes back even further, in the 1980s, my views were extremely unpopular. I mean, I was regarded as a kind of a freak. And today, there's all these young people who agree, who are on the same page, and I'm so happy about that. It's a wonderful thing to behold.
Well, Thomas Frank, I think that's a nice note to end on this 4th of July, and I thank you very much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure, Ian.
And again, I'm speaking with Thomas Frank, who's the author of What's the Matter with Kansas, One Market Under God, and Pity the Billionaire, The Hard Time Swindle, and The Unlikely Comeback of the Right. And his latest book is Listen Liberal, a former opinion columnist with The Wall Street Journal. Frank is the founding editor of The Baffler and a regular contributor to The Guardian. And his latest book is Rendezvous with Oblivion, Reports from a Sinking Society. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into the phony civility wars when the real issue on this 4th of July is the survival of American democracy itself.